जय राधा माधव सुज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवाधारी
Krishna. Let me offer my welcome, add that to Keshava Prabhu's welcome to our Sunday program here at this ISKCON of Alachua. Although we only have a few new people, I want to let everybody else know that we do appreciate you coming every Sunday as well to our temple here. This evening we're going to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. It's a famous verse, so maybe we can get a few people to chant it along with us. It's found in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Most Confidential Knowledge, text number 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate there. As I mentioned, this is a rather famous verse from Bhagavad Gita. And the context that we're going to be studying this verse in is in the context of the definition of what is bhakti yoga. Okay, so let's chant the Sanskrit. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Yome bhakti prayachati. Tadaham bhakti uparatam. Asnami prayatatmana. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Yome bhakti prayachati. Tad aham bhakti upahritam. Ashnami prayatatmana. Does anyone want to chant? Translation, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. So these are Krishna's words to Arjuna. And he's explaining bhakti yoga. What I'd like to do is read the purport a little later, but there's another lila in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Krishna speaks these same words to one of his devotees. And so I want to go to that lila and read a little bit from there about how it is that Krishna is speaking these same words to his devotee. The devotee is Sudama Brahmana. And talk a little bit about that, the interaction between Krishna and Sudama, to get some idea about what we really mean when we talk about bhakti yoga. Prabhupada, he gave a definition of bhakti yoga. He said that he called it loving devotional service. And I think that's such a beautiful definition because it defines love between the living entity and the Supreme Lord Krishna in terms of doing something, rather than in a state of just being. Quite often we think about love, just some being in love, and it's some kind of, I don't know what it is. Esoteric, some feeling or something, but Prabhupada makes it very concrete. Loving devotional service. It means some action. doing something to express your love. And this Leela between Krishna and Sudama, Brahmana, it illustrates this very nicely. And so I think it helps us get a look at the meaning of this verse. So I want to read a little bit from that, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from Krishna book, actually, Prabhupada's translation, 10th canto, Krishna book, and then talk a little bit about the interaction between Krishna and Sudama, how it's a yoga of doing love rather than a yoga of being love. So this section is where Krishna and Sudama are now together, and I'll tell the whole story in one way, but this section particularly I wanted to read to get it in your minds. Krishna was engaged for a long time in talking with Sudama Vipra about their past association. Then, just to enjoy the company of an old friend, Krishna began to smile and said, "My dear friend, what have you brought for me? Has your wife given you some nice eatable for me?" While he was addressing his friend, Lord Krishna was looking upon him and smiling with great love. He continued, "My dear friend, you must have brought some presentation for me from your home." Lord Krishna knew that Sudama was hesitating to present him the paltry chipped rice, which was actually unfit for his eating. And understanding the mind of Sudama Vipra, the Lord said, "My dear friend, certainly I am not in need of anything, but if my devotee gives me something as an offering of love, or even though it may be very insignificant, I accept it with great pleasure. On the other hand, if a person is not a devotee, even though he offers me very valuable things, I do not like to accept them. I actually accept only things which are offered to me in devotion and love. Otherwise, however valuable the thing may be, I do not accept it." And here are the same words again that we just read in the verse in Bhagavad Gita. "If my pure devotee offers me even the most insignificant thing, a little flower, a little piece of leaf, a little water, but saturates the offering in devotional love, then I not only gladly accept such an offering, but I eat it with great pleasure." So how is it that Krishna came to the point of speaking these words to Sudama is a very interesting history. They were in the Gurukula, or school for young children, together, Sudama and Krishna. And there in the Gurukul, they learned some very basic, important lessons about what is bhakti yoga, what is actually love between the devotees of the Lord for one another and between the devotees and the Supreme Lord himself. These things are the foundation, actually, of the Gurukul system, where young children go to school, and the primary thing they learn is how to have loving exchanges with each other and the Supreme Lord. And so that was the case with Krishna and Sudama. They were sort of friends for a long time from their childhood. One time, they went to the forest to collect firewood for the ashram. In the ashram, they would use the wood and fires for performing Vedic sacrifice, for cooking and so forth. And so it was one of the duties that they had as children at a school to do some service. Again, the point, they weren't just there to have an esoteric experience of love, as my god brother Buddha Bhavana says. But no, they were there to learn how service is love. And so together, Krishna and Sudama went to the forest to collect firewood. And it was probably a little later in the afternoon, because what happened was, just like around here we have in the summertime, you know, in the late afternoon these thunderstorms come. You know, the clouds build up, and then these late afternoon showers come. And so a similar thing happened to Krishna and Sudama. They were out in the woods collecting the firewood, and all of a sudden a storm came up. First it was a dust storm, and then winds, and finally a sort of torrential rain. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, it wasn't like rain, but it was like a devastation. So we can understand it was raining pretty heavily. And the boys, they became a little lost and disoriented by the wind and the dust and the rain, and their footsteps were, because it was raining so much, the footsteps were also washed away, and they were lost in the forest. And they just had the two of themselves for comfort. And they were feeling cold after a while and wet, rather miserable, and they were helplessly sort of clinging to each other. It's a good example in one sense, you know, for all of us, the material life sort of all does the same thing to us. It blows into our life and we're in difficulty in one way or another. But at least if we have a God brother, God sister we can hold on to and help us see us through that, we're in a better situation. So was the case for Krishna and Sudama. One interesting fact that the our acharyas comment on this is that while they were wandering, and you can imagine two young boys in this kind of situation, they were wandering. They had already collected some firewood, and because that was their service, despite the fact of being disoriented and the wind blowing and the rain and this way and that way and the cold, they were holding on to the firewood. They didn't just put it down and have some concern for themselves. But they actually had concern for serving their guru. And so they held on to that firewood throughout the storm. This is indicated by Srila Sridhar Swami, one of the early commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Sanskrit indicates that they continued to carry the wood throughout their sojourn that evening. And it turned out to be an all-night thing. You know, they didn't get back to the ashram. They had to spend the night alone in the forest. And in the morning, when their guru, Sandipani Muni, realized that they were gone, he sent his disciples out to find them. You know, he was concerned that these boys didn't come back. And he was so concerned that he himself also went out searching for Krishna and Sudama. And when he met them, and this is where we get our first lesson about what bhakti yoga really means, and this verse about offering Krishna and receiving from Krishna, what it really means. When he met them, Srila Prabhupada says that, and let me just read it, because I think Prabhupada says it certainly better than I could ever say it. He says that, with great compassion, Krishna is describing this to, recounting this with Sudama. He says, with great compassion, our guru said, my dear boys, it is very wonderful that you have suffered so much trouble for me. Everyone likes to take care of his body as the first consideration, but you are so good and faithful to your guru that without caring for bodily comforts, you have taken so much trouble for me. So the first point is bhakti yoga, or real love, means some self-sacrifice. It means putting someone else's interest before your own, a selflessness. And I think if you look at statements that we find about the world around us, this quality of self-sacrifice is very valued or prized in human interaction. And so certainly, when we talk about spiritual life, this idea of sacrificing for others is very, very important. And again, the verse, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or whatever, I will accept it. This verse is indicating that giving up something that's of value to us for the benefit of others, for the benefit of the Supreme Lord, is the first principle of bhakti yoga, or developing true love. And just to show you how important this is, I went back and I looked at the Sanskrit for this verse spoken by Sandipani Muni. And it starts, Aho he Putrika, Aho he Putrika. He Putrika means, oh my children. And if you look at the translations, if we look in the 10th canto published by the BBT, the translation is there. And it says, Sandipani Muni said, oh my children, you ever suffered so much for my sake. But this word aho is not mentioned in the translation here. So what happened to the aho? It's an exclamatory kind of statement or feeling. And Prabhupada includes it in his translation in the Krishna book. He says, with great compassion. In other words, Krishna and Sudama took so much trouble for their guru, and their guru appreciated that so much that he reciprocated with feelings. He reciprocated, he says, aho, aho he Putrika. Not just, oh my children, but, oh my children, you've taken so much trouble for me. Thank you so much. He's indicating with emotion. It's, in other words, that self-sacrifice elicits an emotional response from the other party that we're rendering that service to. And that's what bhakti yoga is about. Bhakti yoga, it's a yoga of doing something. Because you did something for me, therefore I have a loving, reciprocal feeling for you. That's bhakti yoga. And so we see that in this aspect of the story between Krishna and Sudama. But that's not all. There's more. Actually, the story goes that after the Gurukula, where Krishna and Sudama were there together, they went off in their different directions, as we do when we leave school. And Sudama, he came from a very poor family, poor background. But he was satisfied because he was a devotee. He wasn't in need or want of things. Yet his wife asked him, because they were suffering, if you're a married person, we all know we have to have some means in the house. So his wife asked him, please go and see your friend, your old friend Krishna. Certainly, he's a being king living in Dwarka. Certainly, he'll help you. He'll see your need and he'll provide something so that you can have something for your subsistence. So she asked him many times like this, and so finally he agreed. He agreed, well, at least if I do this, I won't go ask for anything, but I'll be able to see my old friend Krishna. So he went to see Krishna. And when he got there, after going through a long journey and so many palace walls and guards and everything, he finally got to meet Krishna. And Krishna greeted him. Now, in the Vedic culture, there are certain rules and regulations about greeting brahmanas and worshipful persons. And so Krishna followed those things. What do they do? They give you a seat, they wash your feet, they offer some articles. All things that can be done in a very ritualistic way. But do you think Krishna was executing rituals when his old friend Sudama came to meet him? No, he was doing something, but it wasn't a ritual. It had a feeling behind it. It had a feeling behind it. And you know, these artists in our society are so good that if you go to the 10th canto, I hope you have copies of it. If you go to the 10th canto, I know you're not going to be able to see this, but I just want to show you. There's a picture here of Krishna welcoming Sudama. And he's looking at him, crying. Tears are flowing from his eyes, and Sudama is looking back at him. It's a wonderful depiction of the loving exchange between Krishna and his devotee. It's not ritual. And you could say that, well, Krishna greeted him and he did all the things properly you're supposed to do. But no, it was a loving exchange between the two of them. And that's what bhakti yoga means. In bhakti yoga, we do the same kind of things that they do in many different yoga traditions, or certainly in Hindu traditions, we do certain things that are the same. If you go to any of the millions of temples you find in India. But what's different about a Krishna conscious temple? What's different about a devotee of Krishna relating with Krishna? It's this kind of a loving exchange that we find between Sudama and Krishna. And that's a wonderful picture there. And there are so many pictures that our artists have done of that scene in Radadesh in Belgium, where I go and visit yearly. In the room I stay, there's this painting too. And there, you know, Krishna's crying again. He's washing the feet of Sudama. Sudama's hesitating. No, 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 don't do the service. Not that he's saying, oh yes, I'm Brahmana, come wash my feet. He's not saying like that, no. He's hesitant. No, 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 no. But this is the characteristic of the love that's going, being exchanged between the two of them. So, that's sort of like the how of doing. How does it done? In this verse, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit. So, how does one offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit? How? Yes, it's with love and devotion. It's with love and devotion. Not just that, oh, here's a fruit, here's a flower, you don't take it. Fine. No. It's done with a certain attitude, a certain feeling that's not ritualistic, that has some loving intent. And I think we all know the difference between a loving intent and just doing something because we have to. When we first come to Krishna consciousness, we first start coming around the temple and rendering service and everything like that. We may be told, oh, do this, don't do that. You know, wait, come, don't put your shoes on. You know, take your shoes off. You know, don't touch that. You know, so many do's and don'ts are given us there. We may be sort of turned off. Oh, wow, this is not for me. But be patient, because we move beyond that stage. We move beyond that stage in wonderful ways, so that we can actually taste loving relationships and understand why we do this and why we do that and why we don't do that. And it's important to come to that stage, because otherwise rules and regulations are dry. No one will be able to continue long in the execution of anything if it's just a bunch of rules and regulations. And there has to be some feeling that's evoked. And that's why we stay. You know, we talk about rasa or taste. The taste is the love, the interaction between the devotees and the interaction with the Supreme Lord. And when we taste that, then we stay despite so many rules and regulations that may not be so inviting. So we find this happening in the relationship with Krishna and Sudama, to the point where after Krishna greeted Sudama, then they sat and they talked for some time, just like old friends would do, as equals on the same level. And then Krishna said these words that I read at the start here about asking him whether he had brought anything for him. And what happens is that Krishna is sort of joking with Sudama like this. Come on, you must have brought something. You know, your wife wouldn't send you here with nothing for me. What did you bring? And Sudama was hesitating. He didn't want to, because, you see, Sudama came from a poor background. And what he had was chipped rice. Now, chipped rice is not a very high class kind of a thing. It's common food stuff, you know, common people food stuff like that or whatever. And so Krishna was a king of Dwarka. You know, how could he offer him just this chipped rice? And one of our god brothers, His Holiness Radha Govinda Swami Maharaj, he explains that, you know, Sudama had to walk a long way to get there, and he was carrying this parcel, and he was like carrying it under his arm, you know. So it's like, yes, it has like, you know, who wants that, you know? But he was carrying it like that, you know. So he was also hesitant in that way. How can I give that to Krishna, you know, something like that? But finally, you know, Krishna, he saw this and he knew He's in our heart after all. He knows our intention. He knows our devotion. And so after a while, Krishna just snatched the parcel for him. And let me read that to you because it's also pretty interesting. It says that, then he snatched the bundle of chipped rice which was hanging on the shoulder of the poor Brahmin, packed in one corner of his wrapper, and said, "What is this? My dear friend, you have brought me some nice rice, palatable chipped rice." He encouraged Sudama by saying, "I consider this quantity of chipped rice will not only satisfy me, but will satisfy the whole creation." And so Krishna took it and he ate it. He ate it. He says, "If you offer me with love and devotion a leaf or flower, or fruit, or whatever, or water, I will accept it." Krishna will accept it. He's ready to accept what? Some paltry chipped rice? What did he accept? He accepted love and devotion. That's what he wants from us. That's what he wants from us. And we all have that. We all have that. Now, granted, it may be buried deep in our heart under so many contaminations and material desires, but we do all have the ability to love Krishna. We have the ability to love Krishna. It's trained. It has to come out, and therefore, that's why we find there's so many rules and regulations to do's and don'ts. It's meant to help bring out, to purify our hearts so that we can express our love to Krishna. And how do we do that? By doing something, by offering something to Krishna. Or at least desiring in our heart to offer something. Sudama was so concerned that he didn't want to ask anything from Krishna. But he was ready to do something for Krishna. And we should be like that. We should be like that too. And so Krishna accepted it. And that brings me back to the purport to this verse. And I just want to highlight a couple of things in this purport about this lesson about doing, the yoga of doing love rather than the yoga of being love. Prabhupada says in the purport here that for the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, in order to receive a permanent blissful abode of eternal happiness. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted by even the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification. It's interesting here, he says, the process of achieving such a marvelous result. The marvelous result is an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge. And that's available. And Prabhupada's talking about that again, and just giving a leaf and a fruit or a flower, just a little thing. You do that and you get a marvelous result. It means it's not karma. When Sudama actually got back home after visiting Krishna, he saw his place had been transformed into huge palaces and beautiful gardens, and his wife came out looking like the goddess of fortune, dressed very gorgeously, and he said, "How has this happened? How has this happened? It's not karma. Because if it was karma, you get what you give. He only gave a little chip rice. How could he get palaces and gardens and beautiful people? It's not possible. By karma." So he concluded that it's by the mercy of the Lord only that he achieved all those things. And similarly, the marvelous result that's available to all of us is just a leaf, a fruit, and a flower away. It's just really, it's a fact. It's a fact. If we offer that love and devotion to Sri Sri Radha Samasundar, and they're here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anytime you come here. If you don't even have a leaf of fruit, just lay down on the floor and cry. They'll accept it. They will accept it. And you'll get a marvelous result as in response to that. So Prabhupada says also in a purport here, without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. The process is eternal. It is direct action in service to the absolute whole. It's action. It's doing something. Do something for Krishna. And then he says, above all, the offering should be made with an attitude of love. Krishna needs no food since he already possesses everything that be. Yet, he is willing to accept the offering of one who desires to please him in that way. The important element is in preparation, in serving, and in offering, is to act with love for Krishna. Is that too foreign to anybody here to act with love for Krishna? I mean, we can all understand what that means, right? What it means to act with love for Krishna. Does anybody have any question about that, what it means? Yeah, Ramiya Prabhu.
Listening to you, I was looking at the deities and noticing, for example, we can understand a good example of those who dress the deities every day. They take so much care to select yellow flowers, orange flowers, red flowers, daisies. So they purchase with great care. And then someone threads them in a nice garland in a very nice, beautiful way. And then someone else not just gives it to them, but they place it on in a very nice, careful, decorative manner and put so many other ornaments. So it's like a whole spectrum of love.
Yes.
Not just giving one flower, you can expand more and more.
Yes, yes, expand more and more. That's the way to see. Like a lot of times people, for the first time, they come to the temple and especially if they're not familiar with Hinduism or deities and things like that, this is like idol worship or something. What's going on here? But that's because they don't see the love. They don't see the love, as Ramiya has pointed out. How someone has carefully, with forethought, thought, oh, this would look nice. Let me combine this color with that color. Let me make the girl. Let me just hang it this way. These are all expressions of love for Krishna that he accepts. Yeah, so that's the point I'm trying to make. We can understand what it means to love Krishna. We can understand. It's not foreign to us. We, just like we love our families, our children, we love our country, we love so many things, that same feeling just transferred to Krishna, just transferred to Krishna, will give us this marvelous result. So it says here, the important element in preparation and serving and in offering is to act with love for Krishna. Now there's one final point that I want to make here about this, and it also relates to this verse. And that is that Krishna says that to give, he says what to give him. Prabhupada says in the purport here, one who loves Krishna will give him whatever he wants. So Krishna wants specific things. And we show our love by giving that specific thing. Prabhupada gave the example of himself. If I tell my servant, please bring me a glass of water. But the servant thinks, I'm going to please my guru, so he asked for water. Milk is better than water, so I'm going to bring him a glass of milk. And so he brings Srila Prabhupada a glass of milk. But that's not what he wanted. How is that love? It's maybe feeding your own ego or your own desires, but he asked for water, you give him water. Krishna, in this verse, asked for a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. This is why we are vegetarian, by the way. We're not vegetarian because, well, I shouldn't say it so starkly. People are vegetarians because of religious reasons. People are vegetarians because of they don't like animal suffering. People are vegetarians because of environmental concerns. People are vegetarians for health concerns. So many valid reasons to be a vegetarian. But the reason why the Hare Krishna people are vegetarians is because Krishna, he doesn't ask for meat. He asks for, a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. And this is sometimes a little contentious. And Srila Prabhupada himself would go for walks in the morning in Bombay on the beach. And one Hindu gentleman would accompany him often. And one morning they got into a big fight, because Prabhupada said that if Krishna said to offer him meat, we would offer him meat. And this man didn't like that at all. No, we're Hindus, we're not going to do that. Even if Krishna asked, And so they were arguing back and forth. I mean, Prabhupada was really, arguing for meat eating. But only if Krishna asks for it, you know. Because whatever Krishna asks for, that's what we'll do. And so, whatever pleases Krishna, the devotee is anxious to do because he loves him. Because he loves Krishna, he wants to please Krishna. But the wonderful thing is that even though that's the reason why we're vegetarians, we're also vegetarians for those other reasons also. We can relate to people and maybe they can relate to us and they can also develop a little love for Krishna. Because we want to do what Krishna wants us to do. That's the how, that's the what of the thing. So, just to sort of recap here, bhakti yoga is the yoga of doing love, not the yoga of being love, although it's the yoga of being love too, but that's secondary. It's doing something, doing some selfless service, giving up a little bit of everything that's near and dear to us to please Krishna. And if we do that, then the marvelous result of Krishna consciousness, eternal blissful life, will be ours. So that's what bhakti yoga is, at least from this perspective today. Does anyone have any comments or questions they'd like to make? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. Back there. Back.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for that nice class. We're just remembering a commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about the last line of that verse when Krishna says, Asnami Prayatatmana. So he says that the word asnami means to eat. So it's just referring to eating something. So we translate that as accepting something. But he makes a nice commentary because he said that leaves, water, and fruit, they are eatable, but not the flowers in Vedic culture. I mean, he said, we don't need any flowers, he said that. But Krishna is using the word like asnami, like if it's with love and devotion, even if they are flowers, I mean, I'm not supposed to eat flowers, but I still am going to eat the flowers. So it's very nice because he says that Krishna is so ecstatic when a devotee is offering something with love, as you were saying, that even, you know, like flowers, you're not supposed to be, you know, I still is going to eat it.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah, if Krishna also ate that. The... Thank you. Thank you. Krishna also ate the banana peel that was offered to him by Vidura, right? Vidura was so much in ecstasy, he was offering Krishna a banana, but instead of the fruit, he gave him the peel. But Krishna ate the peel because of the love that was being offered to him. So thank you. Yes? Cauliflower? Yes, cauliflower.
And in the Nectar of Devotion, it tells that when Krishna was a young boy in Vrindavan with his friends, sometimes his friends would tell him, open your mouth and close your eyes, and you will get a big surprise. And Krishna would open his mouth and close his eyes, and they would put a flower in. And when Krishna would make a face, they would all laugh.
Yes. Did he swallow, though? That's the question. Yes, Lila Nanda Prabhu.
So the verse itself shows that Krishna is a person. And although he's the supreme person, you know, he's the greatest of the greatest, he's willing to exchange a loving relationship with someone really minute. So that's unique, because in this world, if you're a small guy, to have a relationship with a big person is very difficult. It's unlikely to happen. But Krishna is so open. So when someone is willing to give you something without having to give you anything, and it's willing to exchange love with you without having to do that, That means he's very merciful and compassionate.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing you point out, Prabhu, is that how Krishna makes himself available to all of us. Even we're just insignificant, but Krishna is waiting to get some reciprocation, with us. And actually also the devotees. When Rupa Goswami describes in Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada's Nectar of Instruction, how loving exchanges amongst the devotees is giving also and receiving prasad. It's one of the ways devotees exchange. And so, if we don't have the opportunity to directly exchange with Krishna, then we exchange with each other. And we try to look for that opportunity to exchange with Krishna, because he's ready to do that. Any last thing, anyone else? Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.